You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you've been having a glorious week. I'm super, super stoked to be releasing another Vox and Hops Sober February 2022 episode, which is sponsored by Pitch Black North, the Satanic Tea Company. Now, if you do not know who Pitch Black North is, let me tell you a little bit about them right now. First off, they are the Satanic Tea Company, and every sip is blasphemy. All of their teas are ethically sourced, they are expertly crafted, and they are created in small batches only. You could head on over to their website, pitchblacknorth.com, and you could check out some of the amazing products they have up there right now, such as their Satan Slumber. They have dubbed their Satan Slumber the elixir even the Dark One trusts to get some shut-eye or just soothe his body and soul. This killer tea contains chamomile, sweet rose hips, hops, valerian, and lavender. Now, you know that I love Pitch Black North, and I'm just so damn stoked to tell you that if you pick some up on their website, which is pitchblacknorth.com, when you're checking out, you can use the promo code VOXHOPS15. That's VOXHOPS15, and you will save 15% off of your entire purchase. Trust me, you will not regret this. They seriously make some of the best teas out there. Their branding's amazing, and while you do that, you will be supporting the podcast, and I greatly appreciate that. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that's a huge metalhead but actually just doesn't drink, they're not into it, it was never their thing, you can tell them that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is doing one whole month with no beers. That's right, a whole sober month. We're doing it right now. Sober February 2022 has begun. And if you were to encourage one of your friends to become a future Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. So let them know that for the rest of this month, there's a bunch of amazing episodes with killer metal musicians where we actually don't talk about beer for a change. Now, today's episode is a very special episode, an episode which I called Sober Montreal, because it features a conversation with a bunch of amazing musicians from Montreal who all happen to be sober. This is Vox and Hops episode number 322 with Roxana of Your Last Wish, Jason Rockman of Shome and Slaves on Dope, Mike Decker and Pepe Poliquin of Born Broken, and Dominic Forrest Lapointe of First Fragment, Barf, and many, many other bands. Get ready, everyone. This is a massive episode called Sober Montreal.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today is a very, very special episode for Sober February. I am joined by a bunch of amazing musicians and humans from my hometown of Montreal, a bunch of prolific people. Very, very stoked to be with you all. I typically introduce my guests on the podcast, but this time around, I'm going to let you introduce yourselves, starting with Roxana. Who are you? What have you been up to? And how long you've been sober?
Hi, I'm Roxana. I'm a singer for the band Your Last Wish, and it's been like something like 15 years almost that I'm singing on this in this band. It's been a while, and I'm sober. I'm gonna be sober really, really soon. Actually, it'll be my first year, wow. January 7th.
Congrats! Coming up real soon. How about you, Jason Rockman?
I've been sober for 29 years. Got sober when I was 21. Do a lot of things. I'm a radio host, and I have a podcast called the Rockman Power Hour. And I used to sing in a band called Slaves on Dope, kind of still do sometimes. And big supporter of being sober. That's for sure.
Vox and Hops alumni too. Episode 10, I believe.
Yeah. Well, old school. I think it was the first one. Was I the first guy you spoke to who didn't drink? I was the first non-alcoholic one you did. Yeah. I
remember that's that. True. That was fun. Absolutely. Very fun at your house. I like that. Back when we used to be able to do that. Mike Decker.
Yo, what's up? Mike Decker, playing a band called Born Broken. Now for, I don't know what, how long has it been now? 12 years now, this band. Sober for 18 years. my second time through. I actually got sober about probably about the same time that Jason did, way back when. We knew each other when we were wee little bits. And I decided to basically go back out and explore the world a little more, you know what I mean, and see if I really needed it. Well, I guess I didn't need it. I needed this more. So, but yeah, but music's been the thing that's been keeping me together.
I love that. Pepe.
Hey, my name is Pepe. I'm in the band with Born Broken as well. I'm a singer in Born Broken and a guitar player in Andas as well. And I've been sober for the past 8 years. And well, actually, like, my inspiration was Jason Rockman. We've been friends for a long time now. And I know I am a liar, but that's a different thing. We'll talk about that later. And, but yeah, like I saw Jason how like he was like doing everything, like being in the band, being a radio host, and doing everything. It makes me like push myself to do it and just to be like, you know what? If you can do it, I can. So, well, and thank you, Jason, about that. So there you go.
Pleasure.
Oh, that was so sweet.
Yes.
Forrest.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Matt. It's very cool. Okay, but I'm the bassist for Augury Bar for Swagman and Terra Mobile. Yeah, for a band now. I work for a bassist session too, but for the live, you know the situation. Sober for a long time, 10 years now, and proud to drive the van after the shows. But it was 2 years ago. And yes, it's not like a beer in school. I like it. It's a good brewery's beer now. And now I try the Perseverance.
Hell yes, from Le Bocay.
Maybe the non-alcoholic beer is good to be relaxed. It can fill your stomach too when you jam something.
It's because hops actually does act as a natural relaxant. So a lot of people say, I got to drink a beer to relax. A lot of people say that, and not being sober people, and then they end up overindulging. Whereas you can enjoy those same effects from a non-alcoholic beer because it's the hops that give you that zen effect. Very stoked to be with y'all. Montreal is a very special city to me. The music scene, we are a very tight-knit community. I've known many of you for over 10 years, going on 20 years. Some of you, as you have mentioned, you've known each other for over 20 years. Some of you, as musicians, we're always helping each other out, whether it be we need to borrow an instrument, borrow a van, borrow a band member. Dominic, you know, Forrest has played in just about every band in Montreal because of that exact reason. And this is why I think it's interesting that so many amazing of humans such as yourselves are all sober and have all basically intertwined and helped each other become sober, remain sober, and stay stronger. So that's really why I wanted to have this conversation with all of you tonight about being sober and being from Montreal and being a musician. Let's start off with something super simple, yet probably really complex because I'm not sober. I'd love to hear what the importance of sobriety means to each of you. Let's start with the person that's been doing it for the longest, that stuck with it. Jason, take us. What does sobriety mean to you and the importance of it in your life?
I mean, it's priority number one. It has to be. The kind of way I live my life, I can't, you know, that's got to be the most important thing before my kids, before my wife, before myself, you know, in terms of anything else I do work. Sobriety is key. Everything else falls after it. And by keeping that, it just puts everything in perspective. I mean, for me, being sober is just, it's become a way of life, but it's also something that I work at every day. And, you know, it's not something that just happens. You know, I don't just wake up and I'm like, oh, I'm sober. I mean, it takes a lot of work. And you know, I suffer from alcoholism. So alcoholism, you know, you take away the alcohol out of the equation, you have the isms. And that's what I spent all this time working on. You know, the obsession to drink was lifted. That's done. I don't want to drink, but it's all the other things that make me an alcoholic that I have to work on. And that's the thing with, you know, with alcoholism. It's all these little things that, you know, if you're not drinking, you might not be drinking today, but you're going to be, you know, doing other things alcoholically. And that's the issue with someone like myself, who I believe is a true alcoholic. It's, that's the daily struggle, you know, but it's a way of life for me. And it's a way of life that I live out loud. I don't hide it. I'm happy to help anyone I can. And I like to try to help by example. I don't really like to try to preach anything, you know, live and let live. My wife drinks. I don't, you know, I buy her beer. There's a little place not far from us called San Cassette. I love going to pick her up some little microbrewery beers, and she's happy. And let's face it, you know, if you're in a relationship and somebody drinks and you bring home a couple of beers, you know, your chances are looking pretty good by the end of the night. So I'm fine if she drinks. I don't partake. But I don't like to force I don't like to force my views on anyone. I like to just lead by example. And that way, you never know. You know, someone like what Pepe mentioned at the beginning, which I thought was really nice, is, you know, like, I never wanted to try to get him sober. He just saw what I was doing and he gravitated towards it. And that's kind of what I do. And that's my thing. You know, that's what the thing that I'm involved in is all about, attraction, not promotion. So, I think it's important that I live, you know, I know it's a long-winded answer, but yes, it's very important to me. And it's for me, it's the only way I can really live. You know, I can't live any other, I mean, I could choose to live another way and drink, but that won't be fucking pretty. That'll get real messy real quick. And I've gone down that road. So
for a perfect transition to Pepe, what does sobriety mean to you?
You know what? It's like being also like, I'm a chef. I've been like working in kitchen all my life. I've been working drunk a lot, like being partying all the time. And to be able to go to work, to get up and have like the energy that I do have now that I never had before, like being like a grumpy worker, just like, you know, like being hungover, like the stuff like that changed a lot since I'm sober. And it's not just that, it's a lot of things, but that's one of the things that I'm really, really happy to do. And all the things that like Jason said, like me, same thing. Like I never pushed anybody to do it. And and when I see people like say, oh, I've been, same thing with Roxana. Like when I saw her that she was trying to get sober, I'll be the first one saying, look, like, if you want to talk about it, we can talk about it. I'm not a sponsor. I will probably never be one. When I decided to stop drinking, I just stopped. That's it. A lot of people like that I know that I went to a few like, meetings and stuff, and there's people that's been sober for 25 years, and they're like, if I see one beer in front of me, I will have to drink it. And that's like something that I'm not, like, I mean, it's not part of me. So, and but yeah, being sober to me, it's my new life. It's the new me. That's what I want to do. That's who I am now. And that's going to be like that forever.
That's amazing. And straight to Roxana, another perfect transition there.
Well, sobriety is new for me. And I'm so happy. Now, I totally find myself. It is really important because I think I took drugs and alcohol for like, I started, I was 13 years old. Every weekend was the same. I feel like I never really feel my real life. So now I'm just discovering myself. I'm discovering what I can do. And as Pepe said, I'm not grumpy anymore. I was always grumpy. I was really miserable. And now I'm happy and I'm enjoying everything, that things like simple things that I use not to enjoy anymore. Like every season are great. Before I was always pissed off. And I mean, it's changed everything. It's changed the way you see your life. It changed the way you see yourself. And for sure, I tried, it was the first time I tried like 1 year. During 5 years, I tried 1 month sober. But after 5 years, now is my first year that I'm sober, let's say now. But I don't want to go back there. I feel way more better, and I accepted myself like I never did before. So it's a gift. You give yourself a chance and you give yourself a gift. So for me, sobriety is really, really important. It changed everything. It
sounds almost like a form of rebirth.
Yes, it is. It is. It was for me.
How about you, Mike?
Fuck. When I first got sober, I actually did it as a almost like a bet test type of thing, because I was living alone since the age of 15. I had a house, and so you could imagine the fucking parties were just off the fucking chains. Like I had shifts, okay? I had a morning shift, an afternoon shift, and a night shift of people that came in. And you came in, you brought whatever you drank, and if you left some, you know what I mean? Like, you know when you open up a fridge and you try and find that last beer? Well, my fridge was like a rabbit. It just multiplied there. There was always beer in there, always, and whatever else, party rooms and stuff. So I basically said, you know, I said, I want to see who's actually a real friend or who's just using me. And I told everybody, yeah, I'm going to get sober. My house was like a ghost scene. It was like,
really?
No one showed up. No one was like, no one called me to say, hey, you doing okay? Hey, you doing this? So I was like, wow. You know what I mean? Like here I am thinking I got all these friends and all these things. And I didn't, I just had all these people just using me for the fact that I had a house and this, and you know, maybe not as much now. Cause of course, maybe I was inviting them because I felt lonely inside because I was alone. You know what I mean? So I wanted to have all these people around me. I wanted to have all this stuff, you know? Hence maybe why I'm a musician too, because I want, you know what I mean? Certain things, you know? But anyways, so that kind of went on for a bit. And let me see. I actually met Jason that first time around. We met through a mutual friend in a couple of the rooms there, and we used to do our thing. I think we were both playing in bands too at the time being.
Yeah,
I think you were in Citizen Dick at the time being.
No, I was just Slaves on Dough. I was in some of the guys that were in Citizen Dick.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. Citizen Dick.
Yeah, it's a grunge thing. You don't want to know. You're too young.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to know what Citizen Dick and singles and first wave of grunge and oh god.
This going back what to 91?
You're fucking dating us, Mike. Stop.
I don't give a fuck. Man. I'm an old fucking fuck. It's too funny. I'm still a grumpy fucking prick. This being sober and happy and this and that, I still wake up grumpy as a motherfucker. But so I did the band things. And then you know what? The rooms kind of got to me there after a while. And I kind of did the same thing again in the rooms after about 2-3 years. Because I got tired of hearing the poor me. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm in the rooms for the wrong reason. I think I'm in the rooms to hear other people's stories to get me sober and not me to get sober. And I left and I went back out. And again, like no one was calling me and no one this. And I was like, what is this? What is it about me? Why aren't people asking about me? And I think finally, when I finally got sober back in 2004 again, that's when I finally had to take a real hard look at me and what my thing was and what are my problems. The fact that I'm always looking for some sort of recognition, some sort of something. And I think that was one of the big things there for me. I was basically two aspirin, two Tylenol away from death. My liver was about to just give out. I had to stop that day. And I remember I went that day straight to detox for 2 weeks. And then I went to a rehab center in Toronto. I won't mention them for the time being, but, that's when I really had to say, okay, you know what? It's me. Even though I have a wife and two kids, I have to think about me now, and or else I'm not going to be here for my wife and my two kids. And the cool thing was is that she stuck by me and she believed in me, and she says, "Do what's right for you now. I love you, and you're the most important thing to yourself now. So go out and love yourself." And I think that was one of the first times where I actually realized what it's like to have to try and love yourself and not hate yourself. You know what I mean? As much as anger that you have and stuff, it's, and now 18 years later, I'm a grumpy fucking prick who hates everything.
But you love yourself.
Well, of course I love myself.
Well, that's new to me. I never heard you saying that before.
Oh, you never heard that, eh, Pepe? Come on. Nah. You know how humble I am. I'm a very humble person. So no, but yeah.
That's it.
Forrest, what does sobriety mean for you?
For me, for sure, it's a hard way. The first time when I tried to stop drinking, it was a lot of no success. And I try. And one day, because it's to stop the hard drug for me. When I stopped the alcohol, but all the people are different with the alcohol and all the other substance. A lot of people can drink with the people and laugh and something like that. It was not like, for me, it was not like that. It was very difficult. And now, yes, it's a good way for the creation. When you jam, when you try to find another ID, it's more clear, it's more clean compared to where you're on drug or alcohol. For me, it was like that. But it's hard. I'm not too strict with me. I can drink a 0.5, but is with no effect. I don't have the taste to have cocaine in my nose or something like that. But for me, yes, it's very the best way for a musician. For me, your instrument is not in the pawn shop. You can play in it. And have fun after the show in the hotel and the party. And you don't drink and you have fun with your friend. And your friend is so stupid sometimes, but it's okay. And you stay straight in this party and it works for sure.
You know what is good with that? It's the fact that you're the only one to remember all the things they said.
Oh, yeah.
And this is great.
And you're always ready to drive, which is great.
Well, yes, too.
You're always ready to drive. And anyways, it's fun when you're on the road and you're, I remember when my younger self being on the road, because I've never been in a band and been not sober. I mean, I was in a band before, but being the sober guy in a band and being on the road and being, you know, on ready for adventures, it's nice to be sober. Because you have a better batting average.
I think it's interesting. Do you think that it's harder for someone from our scene to tackle this issue head on because metalheads, you know, we grew up with the idea of Motley Crue parties.
Yeah. Metallica.
The excess needs to be fun. This is what fun means. This is what a rock star does. Do you think that it's harder for a metalhead to come to terms with the fact that they do have a problem?
I think it's the age that you come in at. I think it may be easier now with, as crazy as it sounds, all the social media and stuff like that to do it. Way back when, we had a book that was written in like the 40s and 50s type of thing. It wasn't really the same, I guess, for I'm talking my experiences. Okay. And, I don't know. I guess, yeah, there was having to do the extreme thing. You know what I mean? I didn't know if when I got sober, if I'd be able to write the same way. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I loved being really, really high in writing. That was, you know what I mean? And then listening back to it the next day and going, wow, that was a really cool riff. You know what I mean? And writing stuff and the lyrics that I came up with and the things and that I didn't know if I'd be able to do it sober. You know what I mean? But I realized, you know what I mean? I was just angry always, whether I had drugs or whatever. This I was just an angry fucking grump. So I could write anyways, you know? And so I think maybe it's maybe easier now due to the sense that a lot of younger kids are like, there wasn't really straight edge, like right in the beginning when we were starting, you know what I mean? Like maybe it's, I don't remember when all these bands like Converge and all these bands really started to come out being with all their straight edge stuff and sober and this and that, you know? I think it was around what, late 90s? They all started to do all that.
There didn't seem to be much in the hardcore scene. There was a lot of straight edge stuff.
Yeah.
So if you listen to the hardcore stuff, you know, you had all those straight edge bands like Youth of Today and Earth Crisis and all those bands that were straight edge that were, so if you had influence from that, but it's interesting now because all the metal, you know, all the people you're talking about, like, you know, we talk about Metallica and we talk about, you know, Megadeth and we talk about, Motley Crue and all those guys are sober now.
So
it's funny because if you have like, you know, I know a few of us here have kids or I know Mike and I have kids. And it's funny because when I talk to my kids, I'm always like, listen, you can do drugs and you can drink if you want, but just know that if you've got it in you that you're someone who's into excess, there's you know that most of these people end up doing the same thing. They either get clean or they die. Mm. It's like there's no real in between. They either go down a really bad path and get really fucked up and die, or they're messed up, or they sober up. And it's kind of nice in a way to be able to say, well, look at all these successful people that did sober up and had more success after, and you know, look back and say, why did I waste my time? So it's almost like it's a great example, because I find the younger generation, I sound like an old man yelling at a cloud, but I find a lot of teenagers now are just a little bit smarter. Like they don't want to fucking waste their time with that, you know? But you know, the metal community, I think it's like Mike was saying, like it's way better now. I mean, there's so many examples now of sobriety and people got their shit together. Yeah, and for sure. You know, you look at a guy like Randy from Lamb of God, who's you know, been sober a long time and he's solid. And there's a lot of guys in that community that are sober and that live their sobriety out loud, and they're brutally heavy, you know, and it doesn't take away from their music but you know, I think Metallica, when they sobered up was a real, when they got, you know, when they started sobering up and they started, you know, doing therapy and stuff and just, well, especially James, you know, obviously, and, you know, being able to have pitfalls and fall back and then come back. And, you know, bands like Aerosmith were really, I think, influenced a lot of people when they got sober in the late 80s, you know, when they came back with, I think it was Pump or Permanent Vacation. No, it was whatever one was first. I think it was Pump, but they came back with that record and they were sober and it was like, whoa, you know, and it's not even an issue anymore. I don't think it's a matter of the music. I think it's just the individual, you know, because there's a lot of examples of sobriety in all music genres for sure. I think in the hip hop community, I don't know, we're not here to talk about hip hop, but that's a community where it's really still, they're struggling to find examples of people that are, you know, are sober and together. And that's a tougher one for, I think, for a younger generation to latch on to somebody who's got their shit together.
Mm, well, hopefully someone steps up in there and can be that role model.
Jason reminded me of a really cool story. Back in 92, I was down at a young people's convention in New York City. So here we are, Times Square, there's like 50,000 young people and we're all sober and we're doing this big event, whatever else. And it's a 24-hour conference that goes on for like 4 or 5 days and there's meetings all day, all night and whatever else. And we're taking over the hotel and it's great. And I'm sitting there in the room and I'm talking about, I'm like, you know, I'm this young musician. You know what I mean? I don't know what it's going to be like, you know what I mean? If I get signed or this or that and have to go out on tour through Europe and they have all these beers and all of this, how am I going to do it? You know what I mean? And this guy beside me says, oh, don't worry about it. I do it fine. You know what I mean? And I look over and I'm like, and I had to take a double take. And I looked and I went, holy fuck, that's Pete Black from King Diamond. And he's like sitting like right beside me. And I was like, and we just the whole weekend just talked and he gave me all kinds of like encouragement and this and that. And it was just like the first time seeing that was one of the first times, actually it was the first time that I saw like a real, to my eyes growing up, rock star. Because when I was young, King Diamond, them, Conspiracy, Abigail, this and that, you know what I mean? Like I see these people on the TV, I see these people on that, and that's all we had back then was Music Plus, you know what I mean? Power Hour, this and that, you know what I mean? And to actually see this, you know, I was like, wow, here he is sitting beside me and he's sober. You know what I mean? So I thought that was a really good, yeah. Now you have social media. Now you could just log online and just see these people and see this. And like you doing these podcasts and stuff for people to hear, you know.
It's a whole new day and age. It's very interesting to how everyone wears everything on their sleeve, and for the good and for the bad. And this is for a good one, where there are role models that are voicing the, you know, their challenges and their successes, and inspiring a whole new generation of people that are okay. It's okay to talk about these things, and it's okay to open up and to tackle your demons if you have them. I am interested in advice. If you could pick one piece of advice that was the best advice that you received when you were struggling with making that decision to finally giving up on your addictions, what advice would that be? Pepe, go first.
What advice? It's like, it's hard. I really like, I don't know how to give advice over that, you know, because nobody actually gave me advice. You know, I just like, I felt like it was time And like I said, like I saw like how like Jason was like going through his life. But I would just say, like, if you feel like it's a problem, I'd say yes, like go try to do something about it. But I never felt, well, it, you know what, like I say, like I never felt it was a problem. It was a problem. Like, I mean, I was not like I didn't need to have like alcohol in my body every day, but I was like touring, partying, being sponsored by Jägermeister. We had like, yeah, well, you know us with Andas, we were like partying all the time, and that was it. Like, and it was when I decided to stop and to be like, at first during the first tour I did sober, people were like, some were mean, you know, like, because they're like, they know me as a party guy. They're like, yeah, yeah, no, Pepe, you need to drink. You need to do this. You need like, yeah, you're like, but a lot of people actually said like, you know what? You're the same guy. Like, you're still a party guy, just not like drunk. And that was good. And that's what I want people to try, you know, like to be, because a lot of people are like, they need the drink to be social. They're less like, they're less shy and stuff like that. And as a guy that sometimes I'm very shy and sometimes I'm not, and I'm like, I'm more confident than I was. But I mean, that's something that you need to work on. If you drink because you're that type of person, it's going to be hard for you to stop. But I mean, just that, like, you know, confront your fears type of thing, you know? And, but yeah, like I said, like I got like people that were like, oh no, like, and that's why I was like drinking non-alcoholic beer on tour. That way people never bugged me.
No.
Cause yeah. They're like, oh, you drink. And I, yeah, they don't. So
yeah,
kind of a way to do it.
I'm hearing resonate a few things Mike mentioned and Forrest mentioned, the fear of not being able to be the musician that you were. And then the Pepe speaking right now is the fear of no longer being that person that people expected from you. And those are things that are fallacies, but it's something that also keeps you hooked with what you have, the addictions that you have. It's another enabler, almost a personal enabler. I need this for my music. I need this for my social interactions. I need this for many. It's almost as if we invent many reasons why we need this in our life, when in all reality, as a human, we could do much better without it and remember it and have much more fun. How about you, Forrest? Do you remember what's the best advice that you received when you were trying to get clean?
Yeah, but it's important because it's not the same. The same time now, because when it was the 80s and the 90s, like example, I start my first bass tabs, it was Appetit for Destruction of Guns N' Roses, okay? And this guy smoke at the same time and drink at the same time. Yeah, when I start, it was a metal musician. You need to drink. He's not a clean person. and now that it's different, and we have a chance for that, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You can drink a juice, something like that, and it's like you. But if you have not a beer in your hand, maybe 10 years ago, it was not the same thing, the people.
Yeah, I believe that.
But now it's cool. But yeah, the alcohol is everywhere. In the convenience store, is everywhere, and when the human go on the moon, you have the wine with him, for sure. And yes, and if you don't want to drink something like that, it's not for you. Stop it, and the world can turn again.
How about you, Roxana? Fresh into your 1 year of sobriety, do you remember the best piece of advice that you received?
Listen to yourself.
Mm.
Don't listen to anybody else, because a lot of people, you think they maybe are really good friends. They're going to try to say, are you sure you don't want to? Are you sure? Just one. And you know, it's easy to say, yeah. And actually, the same thing about like being a musician. I'm a singer, you know, most people know me because I'm I'm loud. I'm not really shy. I'm always like, I'm going to like, I'm kind of a crazy girl, but actually I'm that naturally. Okay. So for me, I was just like, I always have been the party girl, the one who's doing stupid things and saying whatever she thought. And when I was just like, okay, I'm going to go see my friend with no alcohol. Like some people's like, it told me that the famous sentence, like, are you scared to having fun or what? And I'm just like, am I not fun now? Is that it? Or, you know, and actually for when they started being drunk a little bit, the people around didn't notice that anymore. And we did have fun. And at the end, I was kind of the most funniest person in the room because I did stupid things and this guy was really funny and it wasn't that much. And I was like, finally, you know what? I didn't change that much. And I'm totally comfortable with that. And one thing I really want to say, I only want to take the time to say that. One thing that helped me a lot was this calendar. It's a simple calendar made by Simon from Beyond Creation.
Hell yes.
And he is a really good photographer. And what I did actually, it's here is where I start. So every day, nice. I put an X every day.
And that would be at the night of that day or in the morning of that day?
Probably the night. The okay, night of that day. Yeah.
Through the day. Yeah.
See? I mean, oh my God, sorry. I'm so happy. Like every month, every time I saw all the X and I was so happy. I was like, oh my God, it's been a while. And this is great because you can see how many days. And you're just like, okay, I'm going to have to finish this. It's great because you give yourself a goal. And my first goal was my birthday. And when it did happen, I was just like, I feel so good. Then I want to do a year. And now I'm going to have my year, of course, but I don't want to touch this anymore. I mean, it's amazing. And if you are, well, not you, but if someone want to try this and just say, okay, I want to try 3 months or something, take a calendar. It's great. It's good. It makes you feel well every time. In you can see by yourself every day you didn't take anything. And it's great. It's a visual. I don't know how to say that.
It's a visual aid. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. This was it. So yeah, that's it. And that's the new one that I have for the New Year's from Simon. If you want to buy it, by the way, because his calendar are really nice.
He took all the pictures and he put all
yeah,
together.
It's yeah, he gorgeous. Put all together. So
good free plug.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's true. It's great. Yeah. So yeah, that's it. Take a calendar. It's really helpful.
I love that. Jason, been doing it for so long. Do you remember back in the day what the best piece of advice was?
Well, you know, Roxana hit it on the head. The way I was taught was one day at a time. Mm. And, you know, crossing off, I mean, I love that. I've never heard of that. And I think it's great crossing off a day. I mean, because that's pretty much how I live my life. Like, you know, yeah, it's great. Sound, you know, I've got 29 and a half years. It's, you know, sounds fucking awesome coming up on 30, you know, 3 decades of sobriety, hopefully, but it all happened one day at a time. And it was really like Roxana said, you know, I remember going through my first month and, you know, I'm in a 12-step program. So, you know, we would have milestones where we would have like a 30-day chip or we would have a 60-day chip or, you know, and it was such a proud moment. You know, I remember my family showing up when I got my 30 days and my 60 days and my 90 days and my year. And, you know, every year I would take my cake and I would have my sobriety date and, you know, family and friends would come and they'd celebrate with me. And it was really nice because it's a huge accomplishment. You know, when you're someone who doesn't know, you know, any other way and you find this like, and like, you know, what Mike touched on at the beginning. I mean, I remember that when I sobered up, I was young. I was on my own. I was the only guy who had his own. I was the first guy in my friends who had his own apartment really young. I emancipated by 16, 17, you know, 18. I had my own place. You know, I was young and I had my own place. And I was always the party central because the other kids still lived at home. And I remember when I sobered up, man, they scurried, like you turned a light on and there were roaches.
Yeah, that's horrible.
There was nobody, but it's okay because it's funny. People say like, do you have any friends from when you grew up? And I don't have any friends from when I was in elementary school. I have friends from when I got sober and I've got friends that I've, and nobody really, I don't have anybody in my life besides family from more than 29 years before. Like, I don't have any friends from, you know, 40 years. I've been friends with them for 40 years. I've tried to keep friendships with some of these people, but some of them are dead. Some of them are, we just don't have anything in common. Some of them, I don't even know where they are. You know, some of them were hospitalized. Like, it's just the way it was. And the best advice is to do it one day at a time. And that's why when I see Roxana, you know, year in, crossing off her days, I think it's beautiful. It's amazing, because that's the visual aid and that sense of accomplishment. I mean, it's a huge deal to get through 24 hours if you're someone who has a problem with alcohol, you know, and I that's why I have a program. That's why I have, you know, a set of steps that I work. And that's why I have accountability, because I want to become a better person. I don't want to just be stuck. And what happens is, you know, when they say there's something called the pink cloud. And when you get past the pink cloud, like they say, sometimes between a year and 2 years, the novelty's worn off and you're like, oh great, I'm sober. Now what? Mm-hmm. And I need a set of tools to get through, to get better. And you know, the thing that I do is I, you know, by the time I have a set of steps, and when I get to the end of the steps, I try to help someone else with that. So I'm always in that step work where I'm always trying to help somebody else. So that keeps me close. So that I have people that have a year, like that have like, you know, a couple of days or 2 days or 4 months or that are near me. So I remember what those feelings are like. And it reminds me of how I felt when I had 4 months or 3 months or 2 months. And it just keeps me always in it. So
that's very interesting.
You know, I don't, again, advice. It's funny what Pepe said too at the beginning. He was like, you know, I didn't, no one really talked to me about anything. It just, he just kind of figured it out. But that's why, you know, the guy giving someone advice and browbeating them, and it doesn't work, because you're going to hear it when you're ready, you know? And I think the most important thing is that once you're in it, it's great to have people around you that can kind of guide you or encourage you, you know? And that's why a lot of people, when they do get sober, they tend to find new friends. They tend to lose a lot of the friends that they had in the past and realize those were just acquaintances that were because of partying. They weren't real connections. So
I'm lucky, I think, because most of my friends, I still have them.
That's great.
At the beginning, it was hard, but they did accept it. And now they're happy to pay me. Hey, look, it's a beer with no alcohol. And they're so happy to give it to me.
Sure.
I'm so lucky.
And the thing is, like, getting on stage for me, I got, you know, I have a whole other persona when I get on stage. And no matter what happens, when I get on stage with Slaves on Dope, I'm that person. And I don't really like that person, to be honest, because he's an asshole. And it's, I don't know what happens, but, and I can't help myself. I'm not the same guy when I go up on stage, and when I come off, I'm a different guy. I'll say things when I'm up there. I'll do things that are just stupid. And it's this juvenile, stupid thing that it's almost like, that's kind of one of the reasons why I don't like to do it that much. Cause it's like, it's embarrassing. It's like, dude, like, you're saying stupid things. And it's like, I guess I don't do it enough to work on it, but I just find myself every time I step on stage, I have to come out and say something that totally disarms everyone, that's totally inappropriate, that shock value. And it's like a persona, but in a way it's good because it's a persona. And I think that a lot of musicians, if they can put the, you know, separate the two, and like, that's who I am when I'm on stage. And when I get off stage, I'm a different, like, and you see that with a lot of musicians. They are a different person when they're up there. When they come off, they're mild-mannered and not at all like that.
Yeah, that's kind of like when I saw you at Backstreet when you were singing Commodore's Easy Like Sunday Morning there, whatever else, and you were swinging the microphone like a penis. And
yeah,
you were...
yeah. It's cute when you're in your 20s, but when you're 51, saying, you're like, oh, you're good. It's like, it's just not cool.
when someone is ready, and Pepe mentioned that he told Roxana this. What do you do when someone is ready and wants to talk to you?
You let them talk.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. What Mike said, you let them talk. You just be there. You be an ear.
Yeah.
You don't judge.
Yeah, you let them talk and you let them make up. To tell you the truth, half the time they answer their own questions. Mm. You know, I know that they're with me. If you get me talking enough, I'll start answering my own questions when I'm in that type of a state. So you, as long as you let the person talk and you just be there and you don't judge them, and if they ask for help, you try and direct them in the right ways, you know what I mean? And be there for them, you know, you don't have to divulge your whole life to them. You know what I mean? Cause sometimes it scares them off. Mm. You know what I mean? So you just let them talk. And if they need help to go to a meeting or whatever else, well, then you go. You know what I mean? Why would I do that? Because it's someone else's life who needs help. And if they're asking for help, well, I asked for help. And it's only, should I say, not important, but my duty to give back, because I got a second chance in life, or a third or fourth, or I don't know how many chances I got. Who knows if this person may have a second or third or fourth chance. So you try and help out, but that's all you can do. You can't do more than that. You know what I mean? You can't guide them by the hand and force them not to drink and force them to stay in their rooms and force them to call you and force them to get a sponsor and force it. You can't, you know what I mean? You just gotta just do your best and that's it. You know,
I think Roxana, you mentioned to me, that people are already coming up to you now and saying, oh, you've inspired me.
Yeah.
I want to do it too. So even at a 1 year in,
yeah,
you can be a positive influence on people that may be struggling.
But I think it's like we said before, it depends how you see it. Like I told you, like I'm pretty much an open book.
Mm-hmm.
I think everything that I learn from others, everything that I do learn, I want to share it to people. I knew that I will recently, like a year ago, let's say it again, that I will never have children. So that's kind of wake me up for a lot of things, like being a single woman alone for a long time. So I'm just like, okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to get my shit together and I'm going to do what I always want to do. And everything that I'm going to learn, I'm going to share that to people who want to learn it too, or maybe that can help them. So at this point, like if you follow me on social media, you can see that for a long time, I didn't really talk that much about myself, maybe a little bit, but now I'm pretty much an open book, just because I want the people, everything that I learn, I think it's good for myself. Maybe it's good for somebody else. So when I said I'm going to do that openly, people encouraged me a lot. That was great. People following me for that. I have a lot of message, personal message, like, how did you do? Well, how did you start? And everything. I was like, I just knew it, but like start with a month. It's a good beginning, or maybe a week. But I told them, like, me, I just start for a month, but every year during 5 years, it took me 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Before I say, okay, I'm doing it. I have to do it. I have to try. But it may be different to one person to another. So as I told them, if you do have a problem, you need that. You need a professional. It's the only thing, because I'm not better than anyone. I just have this feeling and I needed to do that to change my life, because I know it's now or never, you know. I'm having 38 years old. So, I mean, time's going fast. And
you're still a baby.
But I mean, like, you see, like when you wake up, like that's the thing. I don't know for you guys, you know, when you wake up and you're just like, what the hell did I do during all those years?
For sure.
Yeah, when you're just like, oh my God, I was so much in the fog, and now I'm just like, wait a minute. What the, it's the only expression. I don't know if there is a word for that. A wake up call.
It's also like you get this sense of urgency. Like you're like, oh my God, I wasted so much time. Like I want to live now. And that's a great thing, but you can't dwell on the past. I mean, it's done. No. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a process.
Oh yeah.
You have to accept it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to accept it for sure. For sure. And that's why, you know, again, I the way I got sober, I had a process, you know what I mean? And that's what helped with it. It helped me process all that stuff.
It is a long process.
It helped me realize what was the, you know, what were the reasons I drank, you know, remembering being an alcoholic from a young age before I even drank, you know, the reasons why, like, you know, a lot of people talk about fear and they talk about being, you know, being fearful of things and like social anxiety, and that you would have a drink and it would give you that calmness or that social lubricant that they take to, you know, be able to get on stage or be able to talk to somebody in a party. And my youngest memory being an alcoholic isn't drinking. It's not when I took my first drink. It's being in the schoolyard in elementary school at like 6 years old and being at one you know, one corner of the schoolyard and looking across the other end of the schoolyard and seeing a group of kids and being sure they were talking about me. Wow. I was sure they were talking about me, that paranoia. And I remember the ease and comfort that I got when I drank. The first time I took a drink was like, oh, wow. And the only time I got that ease and comfort again was when I walked into my first AA meeting. That's when I got that ease and comfort again. And that's when I realized, okay, now I'm going to know how to live and I won't, and I can deal with all those feelings. But when you're drinking and you're trying to self-medicate and deal with all that, it's like, I really do believe that if you've got a problem with alcohol, it's a predisposition that you have. It's in your makeup and the alcohol is a symptom, but it's all the other shit that you need to deal with. And that's why, you know, if you're like someone like me, if I'm not working a program, I'm white knuckling it. I'm hanging on for dear life and not changing anything. And every day I want to be a better person. And every day I realize I have so much to learn about myself. And even 29 years in sobriety, I don't know fucking anything. And I'm okay with that because I just want to keep learning.
No, actually, there's one thing that I wanted to say. You know, we talked about this earlier, about like when you stop drinking or whatever you do, about your friends, you know, when I stopped drinking at first, for like the first, like maybe 5 or 6 months, people stopped calling me to go to parties and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why are you guys doing that? You know, we don't want to encourage you to drink. You're like, I said, yeah, but the reason you're doing that now, what makes me want to go and drink again, because you guys don't call me to do parties. I want to be with you guys. I want to go over this. I want to be able to be with you guys without drinking. And after me talking with them, it became like it changed, you know. So I know it's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. Like Jason said, like, doesn't have his friends from when he was like in elementary school and stuff like that. I still have like my best friend that I've, like, we've been friends since I was 6 years old, and he's going to be my friend forever. He's my brother now. And so like, that's not going to change because he's been supporting me since day one. So some people support you. Some are a bad, like, they're going to influence you to start drinking again. So, you know, you have to do some choices.
Hey, you, do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony, also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided, why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
I was just, I'm interested in how being sober during a pandemic that had to have any influence versus before, like Roxanne, you got sober during the pandemic. Mm. Jason been sober forever, Mike as well. But was it being the pandemic was difficult for many people? People were overindulging in many things. I was wondering if it made those one day at a time, were they harder during the pandemic versus before?
Seriously? I think it was, for me, it was easier because I didn't have the influence around me. I had my own bubble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky enough to have a tapis course. I don't know how to say that in English again.
Treadmill.
Thank you. So I have that at my home. So I was running, training. So yeah, I have that just beside my computer, not for nothing. So I was training, and that helps a lot. I practice a lot of vocals. I keep myself very, very busy, and I discover a lot of things and new passion. Actually, I didn't play piano for a while. I started to play again. And like it was good. It was easier because if I decide to stop and after that, oh, yeah, I'm going to go see a show. Oh, yeah, it's going to be fun. Of course, I'll go sing a show, but I want to drink and I want to, you know, and I think it was a good process for me. I think it was, it did help a lot to being alone with myself, create my own bubble, my own safe place. give me more confidence to going out after, because I had the time to know myself as a sober person.
Hmm. It's almost as if you're meeting yourself again for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, living with three women, let me tell you, the COVID parties were off the chains here. I can tell you that. My two daughters and wife, it was like the lights were flashing. We had the disco balls going and they were just enjoying it. You know what I mean? Then again, they're allowed to do that. You know what I mean? Well, not allowed. They can do whatever they want. They're in control of their own thing. So if they want to drink or party or smoke or do whatever, they can, you know what I mean? It's doesn't bother me now anymore, you know, like it used to. So to me, it didn't make a difference being COVID or not, you know what I mean? It was just another day, you know, another day to be a grumpy old fuck.
Forrest.
Maybe that the pandemic, it's a big problem because I don't like the statistic or the percentage, but maybe it's 10% of the people in the society have addiction, very bad addiction, and they have a big problem to resolve that. Mm. And maybe with the pandemic, the percentage is more big, I think.
But some people, they want to have more because they have nothing to do.
Mm, that's true. That's true. Especially when you have your government telling you, you're like, hey, have a glass of wine, you know, like have a velvet vein, you know, stay at home, have a glass, especially the beginning, you know.
And we give you money, right. $1,000, go ahead.
It's crazy because Mike can attest to this because he's had experience with it. Like, you know, in a 12-step program, they say, okay, and Roxana was talking about, you know, like, okay, so we're asking you to live one day at a time. We're asking you just to have faith in something that you can't really necessarily see or understand yet, but you just got to have faith. We don't know how this is going to end and we don't know where it's going to go, but you got to live one day at a time and you're powerless over this thing. You got no, and that's like what the pandemic is. And that's why all the people that I know in AA were like, fuck man, I've been training for this my whole life, you know? And I got on Zoom, like all the, you know, I got into a Zoom group. I got in group with, you know, I have a group of guys that I get together with three times a week and we're on Zoom three times a week doing our meetings like we would do in person, you know, and what's great about it is it's opened up, you know, it's given me a chance to do meetings with people in other areas of the world, like, you know, people in LA, people in Atlanta, people in New York, people in Europe. Like, so you're able to, it's funny how, you know, 12-step programs immediately got on Zoom. Like Zoom was right. Like it was like, boom, right away, because they need that support. Like if you're someone that was going to, you know, five meetings a week, and then all of a sudden you can't go to an in-person meeting, you're like, holy shit, that's my whole support system. So a lot of people had a hard time with it. A lot of musicians had a brutal time because their whole industry, if you were in the music industry, if you were in the restaurant industry, you know, if you're in any of that kind of service industry, your legs were taken out from under you. And musicians, I mean, if you're a working musician, you know, like Forrest, like, you know, he's in all these bands and he probably makes a living playing gigs. And, you know, if you're doing session work and all that, like all that's fucking taken away from you. Like, what are you supposed to do? So a lot of people lost their identity. Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that went on. And, you know, there were people that tried to help, like, you know, Matt, like we did the whole Kings of Quarantine project and all that and tried to raise money for roadies that were out of work, but it really was a challenge. But for people in sobriety, I think it was really, really tough because depending where you were at in your sobriety, like an old fuck like me and Mike, you know, we know what we got to do. But someone who's new, a lot of people, A, got sober, like Roxana, who didn't have the, you know, they took it as an opportunity to say, hey, let me work on myself. You know, I'm going to play, I'm going to work out. And you're insulated and it's great because it's almost like you're taking yourself out of the situation and you're able to work on yourself. But there's other people that went the other way. They got worse. I know people I know musicians that killed themselves. I know lots of people that had a really fucking rough couple of years, you know, and it's just, it's a challenge like anything, but you know, rolling with the punches, like anything in life you know, some people are going to make it out. Some people aren't. And it's tough, but I know a lot of people that had a challenge with it.
It's tough. Maybe the sport is a good thing.
Yeah.
When you stop drinking or
the best.
The hard drug, yeah, the best thing is a sport. And we miss the sport because when we did the show, it was a lot of sport on the stage.
Yeah.
And it's because that is no show. Maybe the musician need more sport maybe at this time.
Yes.
It's a good idea.
But you, Dominic, you were doing a lot of bicycling.
Bike messenger.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I work a lot of, but the tower is empty now in the downtown.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's no job. I just switch on the truck. I teach bass and I work on the delivery with the truck. It's not a full delivery. It's a box or something like that. But it's a good. It's a good sub for a musician.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of job now.
Yeah.
Outside of the bar and the restaurant, for sure.
Absolutely.
But we try to stay informed. But I run like Forrest. I run one time per week, okay? Here to the Pongeur quartier, to the Place des Arts. And maybe going and back is 5 kilometers.
Mm. Oh, that's really good, man.
Non-stop. And when you clean, maybe your body of the toxin, maybe it's more good.
It is good. You're right.
For sure. One time per week.
Jason mentioned early in the conversation that when you're dealing with alcoholism, once the alcohol is gone, there's still a bunch of isms.
Mm.
I like to wrap this up with a positive ism that you have tackled. Dominic was just talking about it right now. Forrest was just talking about doing physical activity as an ism that he latched onto to keep his mind busy and his body busy. I'd like to hear some of your other ones. What is an ism that you've tackled onto that has helped you actually get better through this process?
Well, you know, me personally, I've been like, well, you guys probably know, I buy so many records. My points in life right now, like I finish working, all I want to do, well, of course, I want to see my girlfriend. That's the whole thing.
Good one. Good one.
What I want to do is, and Mike knows, we make music, stuff like that. Like, it's going to be forever. But to come in my living room, put my record on and sit and do nothing, that's my thing right now. Mm. That makes me happy. And I'm looking forward to do it like for many, many days and years and stuff. So that's my ism.
I love it. Mike, what's an ism that you've kept throughout all these years that keeps you happy?
Dude, I'm a grumpy old fuck, man. Nothing makes me happy. I guess the biggest thing is knowing that the world's not going to change. The world is not supposed to change. It's I am the one who's supposed to change and grow and adapt to my own situations. Learning to love myself and not hate myself and thinking that everybody hates me and I have to hate everything. You know what I mean? It makes great fodder for like song lyrics and stuff. You know what I mean? Like the world, all this hate and blah, blah, blah. So I still go back into that teenage angst, you know what I mean? To pull out the lyrics and stuff, but no, just to really, to know that, you or I have to work on myself more than I have to work on the world around me. So that's kind of it.
Roxanne, you go back into piano, you're running on your treadmill. Well, what's another good thing that's happened? An ism, something else where your addictive tendencies jumped onto?
I start practicing clean vocal.
Ooh,
it's been years and years and I didn't do it. And soon I'm going to show you soon, but not now, but soon.
Very exciting.
It's great. And I keep myself busy a lot, try to learn new things and working a lot about things that I always want to do. So that's it for now. Now my new philosophy is like, there is no limit. Just do whatever you want to do. Just try. I'm there for trying. I only have one life, so.
Mm.
Finding the best deal on butter at IGA. butter's so expensive now. It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Jason, what's a good ism that you don't mind having around?
Well, Mike, it's true though. Going into a grocery store and getting those deals, man, it's a great feeling. It's to Walmart today, and they had those holiday cookies in the Christmas section, the caramel, the salted caramel, and then the candy cane ones that were 99 cents for a box, like a little, you know, a little Oreo thing of these cookies. And I bought two boxes for my kids because they're gonna be here on Thursday. I'm like, they're gonna plow through those in a day. But there were two things that I did in the quarantine, or I guess in the last couple of years. One was the Kings of Quarantine project, which was for me, you know, I love the idea of challenging of like, I'm a big believer in, you know, what Roxana was saying, limitless, you know, and you can do anything. And I really do believe that if you visualize something and you put it out there, you can make it happen. I'm a big believer in that. So that project was fucking insane.
Oh yeah.
To be able to do that and to be able to have that materialize was a big goal of mine. And I, you know, I've been doing it my whole life, right? I've always loved that idea of like thinking this and then it happening. And, you know, music is such a different thing for me now. It's like, I'm not in it like I used to be. Like for me, it's an afterthought. Like I look at music as art now. I don't look at it as a job. I don't look at it as a pursuit. I look at it as art. So whatever I do in music, I have no interest in any monetary gain at all. I just want to do it for fun. I don't care what the fuck happens with it. And ever since I've had that attitude with music, the best things have happened. It's been something I've enjoyed more and more. So the Kings of Quarantine project was one thing, but the big thing that happened in the last year was I finally started a podcast. You know, I've been waiting, and, you know, I've been talking about doing a podcast for 10 years, but because I was in traditional broadcasting, it was kind of like, still not frowned upon, but it was like, oh, you know, you're a radio DJ. I love talking to people. I love interviewing people. I love having conversations. I just love people. I'm a people person. And being able to launch a podcast this year was huge for me. And that's been what I've been kind of like obsessing on and being, you know, doing alcoholically in a way, but it's positive, you know? And that's what I love. Like I have like 7 or 8 episodes that are logged. I know the next 2 months are taken care of. I got more stuff coming, and now everything's starting to come back alive. And what's great is that it doesn't matter if I'm shut down or not. Like I had gotten a space, I'd gotten a studio. I was going to do it all set up properly and have people come in. And then at one point I was like, fuck it, man. I don't need that. Mm-hmm. I can just do it from here. Cause if I wait, then it's going to be another 4 years until I do it. So I finally grabbed it by the balls and just said, let's go, and did it. And like, you know, Roxana was saying, you know, it took her 5 years to finally get the courage to get sober. Well, it took me 10 years to get the courage to say, let's do a podcast. And I don't have to give my content away to anyone. It's my content, and it's great. And it's me, and it's humbling because it's you. We talked about this on Matt and I, we chatted about this. Like it's a humbling experience to go from being part of a big corporation or a big, you know, entity and doing something and being able to say, well, they didn't promote it properly, or they didn't. But when you put it out there, it's like, oh shit, no one cares. Like it's humbling, but at the same time, it checks your intention. You know, like what's your intention? Is your intention to be successful and have all these accolades, or is your intention to do good work and have good conversations? And that's what it is. I just want to have good conversations with people. And if 200 people listen to it, great. If 5,000 people listen to it, great. I don't care because I know I did the best I could for that hour and I had a great time doing it. So, you know, it's the intention. And that was, to me, that was a big one. And I love it. I mean, I'm getting right back on the horse tomorrow after the holidays and recording more. And I love doing that stuff. So that was a big one for me.
It's a monster guest list so far. Every time I see who the next guest is, I'm like, motherfucker, it's so good. we've reached the end. We're a bunch of people, so I'd like to give you all, Jason just did a little bit right there, but I'm sure you have more things to promote. Let's take a little moment, a minute each, to promote what we have coming up in our lives, in our professional lives, in our artistic lives, starting with Roxana. What do you have coming up in the musical sense of the world, the Growlers Choir, other things that we might be able to talk about, might not be able to talk about, doing monster voices?
There's a little thing I am not able to talk about, but something's going to happen very, very... Be in touch for the Growlers Choir. We've been quiet for a while, but you will see. Same thing for Fabrique de Monstres. Same thing. New things happens really, really soon. But anyways, you will see. But for Your Last Wish, we were supposed to have a show for March 10th. We will see if it's going to happen or not. We're working on a single, so it's pretty much that for now.
Amazing. How about you, Forrest? What do you have coming up, Forrest, musically?
Then musically, but I just released a first fragment album.
Yes.
Last October.
Masterclass.
Thanks, man. I work a lot, but yeah, it's a long album, 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's a lot of work to pick up that. Now I can play 5 songs straight, one shot, but it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work. And now Barf will release an album next spring. And now I work on the Terra Mobile album in Augury for the writing. And it will be maybe for the beginning of 2023, this two band, Terra Mobile and Augury. But for 2022, it will be an album of Barf for sure. And I have another session project too, is coming. I don't stop. I work a lot of a new playthrough. I teach. I have 15 students. I teach space. Yeah.
15
during the weekend. Wow. But I work a lot of to play the stuff live. I never stop to jam myself in my room or something. I stay maybe 2 hours set very very strong to play live, ready to play live if the pandemic go out, but we're not sure. But the life is good, and we can create a lot of things with a video and something like that, maybe, and we continue to work.
You're always in shape. I love that. That's a good mentality, because it's really hard to get back in shape to play a show.
Yes.
Much, much harder than being on tour.
Play for sure.
I love that. Born Broken, Mike and Pepe, what do you guys got coming up?
We're set to sort of go into the studio in July to do the third Born Broken album with a new lineup again. This band always seems to have a new lineup, but Pepe stayed strong and I stayed strong, and so we're going to do that. Hopefully, you know what I mean? We'll see the way it goes. I'm not, you know what, again, I'm not in a rush to put anything out. It was 5 years in between each album, and we're just writing for us. We're not writing for any expectations. We write what we want to play, what we want to hear. And if people like it, great. If they don't, well, go listen to something else, because there's a million other bands out there now. You know what I mean? There's a band of the minute, you know, so there's a band of the second on Apple Music, you know what I mean? So besides that, I'm going to re-record with Chris. Jason knows him. I'm going to re-record a band that we had together back in 94, 95 called Resisting Arrest. And we're going to redo that, because that band was kicking it hard back in 94, 95. And then it just, everything got too big or whatever else. We all kind of split up our ways, and we recorded it twice back then, and it just never got out. And I listen to it now, and I'm like, man, those are some hard riffs, some hard things, but the sound quality is 1995, you know what I mean? So it sounds better than a demo tape, but it doesn't sound anything like today. It sounds like you're listening to like 128 kb mp3 that's been stepped on the curb that you pick up, you know what I mean? You know, scratch record. So I'm hoping to do that too and put that out again finally, so that at least I think it's something that in my life I always wanted to get out, but it never did. So it's one of those accomplishments in my life that I want to finally complete, say, you know what? It's finally out. It's finally done. You know what I mean? And now I can move on. Because people still ask me that I knew from back then. The ones that still call me Decker. You know what I mean? Like, I know if people call me Decker, they knew me when I was drinking. You know what I mean? Type of thing. Hey, Decker, how's your band? What's that, RA? Dilute the Poison? Majester? And I'm like, yeah. So bands that never really did anything and never really put stuff out. So with Resisting Arrest, I think it's going to be the one thing to finally get through and done, you know? And with Born Broken, I'll let Pepe take over the rest.
Yeah, like Mike said, we are in the writing process right now. That our studio is booked actually with a good friend of you, Matt. You know a little Chris. So anyway,
Anyway, that's what we're gonna do with Born Broken, and we there's no show planned so far. Anyway, we're just like writing, have fun, and as is for Endas, we've been talking a lot. We like Chris just had a baby a few months ago, so we put everything on hold. But like, there's gonna be some new stuff coming up eventually, and also like me and Jason are doing a tribute to Mini Vanilli. We're going to do a big tour. And we've been really like planning and recording everything ourselves. It's our songs. So that's it.
I got a question for Jason. Jason, what was it like being sober and having your kids see you play?
Very cool. The best.
Isn't that the best feeling?
It's the best feeling, especially since they really fucking hate our music.
Oh, really?
They really do.
I actually loved seeing my kids in the audience.
It is cool.
Singing all the lyrics, thrashing around. And
yeah.
when you see your daughters in the pit, I'm like, yeah, okay. I did right.
It's pretty cool.
I did right.
Hell yes.
Good job.
Yeah, thank you.
Jason, what else do you have coming up besides the Rockman Power Hour?
Well, Rockman Power Hour is obviously, I mean, you know, it's the main focus, and new episodes every Friday. That's going, you know, my partner Ryan and I are really into that. And so Kings of Quarantine, now with the state of things, there are drum tracks for four or five songs that are still done. That are done that we never got finished because it was up and down. Like there was a time when everybody wanted to do it and now no one wanted to. And now everybody's like, hey, when do we do another one? So Bill from Mastodon and I have chatted and he's still down to do more. He loves it. So that might come. There's Slaves on Dope. It's got, I think Kevin told me we've got like 8 songs that we didn't finish that are done that we just didn't put on the last record. So we might actually work on that because he had just had a kid and his, you know, his kid's now almost 2. So he's kind of getting out of the woods with that. So we might find time to work on that and get that out. And, there's one thing that I really was trying to do and it happened all because of me going to Turbo House one night and jamming with Sandvice, but the Sandvice guys, and Vince from Groovy and from Grimskunk have this project that we want to do where we want to play Kaya Sky Valley from front to back.
Oh, yes.
And we've talked about doing that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And we've talked about doing that and we all want to do it. We were going to do it in 2020, but obviously the world went to shit. So that is something that we've chatted with back and forth and said, let's just get ready to do it. And then once we can, let's just book a night somewhere and do it for charity. But that's something that might come. So.
Nice.
Fantastic. Well, I just want to thank you all for taking the time to hang out with me and being so honest and open about your journeys. I was kept very well hydrated by this awesome tea by Pitch Black North, the Satanic Tea Company. This is the it's the cradle of
very cool
tea that they made. Dark blood. It's an English breakfast black tea. Love Pitch Black North. Can't love them enough. This was a true pleasure. Massive thank you.
No, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much.
Super
thank
appreciated.
Really nice. Really
thank
nice.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roxana, to start putting everything together.
Yes. Cheers.
Yes, cheers.
Thank you.
Everybody, cheers.
Woohoo.
Cheers.
Yes.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right today. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, did we ever have a deep conversation here. I was very nervous stepping into this conversation. I'm not sure if you guys could tell that, but I definitely was. I am far from being sober. I'm far from knowing what it's like being sober for quite as long as some of these people have been, and I wanted to be the most respectful person that I could be throughout this conversation and while guiding the conversation. And everyone told me afterwards that they had a good time, so that made me feel very happy, and I think that I accomplished my goal. It's a very insightful conversation, and there's lots of positive things that came out throughout this conversation. If any of these things resonated with you, that makes me very happy. If there's anything here that you think that you would like to take and to move forward in a direction to make your life better, please do that. If you need some help,
reach out to a friend, do it for yourself. Massive cheers to Roxana, Jason, Mike, Pepe, and Forrest for being so, so open and amazing. I greatly, greatly appreciate them giving me their time and sharing their journeys with all of us. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, such as all the details for any episodes, was I dropped throughout that week, if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast. You will get a little glimpse into my mind as I'm organizing future projects before I announce them to the public. You will also get to see all of the album reviews that my album review crew have dropped throughout that week, and you will get to see which albums were added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is curated by my man Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself, and is available on both Apple Music and Spotify, and is packed with the newest, best, most extreme music every single week. It's available on both Apple Music and Spotify, and it is absolutely killer. If you're looking for something new to listen to, the Brutal Awakenings playlist is for you. There is so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I'd hate for you to miss a single thing, so sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a glorious weekend. I will be back next week with yet again two episodes, one on Tuesday and another on Friday. Just remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last five seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Mo, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.